Good morning, listeners, and welcome to another episode of Real World Talks with Lourdes, Natalie, and Kat. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm so excited for today's episode. We have a special guest with us by the name of Dr. Miranda Kitterlin. Good morning, Dr. K.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for taking the time to speak with us this morning. We're super excited.
Me too.
So to dive right in, can you go ahead and let our listeners know who you are, introduce yourself, and share with us your background before you transferred into higher education?
Sure. So like you said, I'm Miranda Kitterlin Lynch. I'm an associate professor in the Chaplain School at FIU. I am also a Coca-Cola endowed professor, which is a great honor. What else did you want me to say?
Talk a little bit about your background before you transferred into higher education.
Okay, perfect. So before I entered higher education, I worked in both the lodging and food service industry, mostly in full service food and beverage. So I started actually in kitchens at 15 and just kind of naturally progressed through. I worked in Louisiana, Michigan, and Las Vegas. I think that's it. Mostly for independently owned properties, which was a really great opportunity, I believe, because it enabled me to do a lot of things that you can't do in a corporate environment, such as writing employee handbooks, marketing campaigns, etc. I entered into academia kind of by accident. I was approached during my master's degree by the Louisiana Public School Board and asked to develop a program for at-risk high school students so that they could spend half of their days working on their GED or GED preparation and the other half learning a trade or skill. And the program I developed for the school system was hospitality. After that, I was approached by a university and asked to come and be an instructor, and I just kind of fell in love with it.
Thanks for sharing that information.
Is that too much?
No, it was great. I was so in tune with what you were saying. So can you also share with our listeners how important diversity is to you?
I think it's incredibly important, not just to me, but for any organization or society, just the world as a whole. If you only have one type of person, if you have an organization with one demographic, then you are really limited in the problem-solving abilities because you have just one really set of ideas. Diversity gives you the opportunity to see different perspectives, to have those different problem-solving abilities. It just strengthens an organization.
So, Dr. K, in kind of continuing that conversation of how important diversity is to you, I know that about a month ago, Dean Chang, in his newsletter that he sends out, he mentioned in lieu of, you know, the injustice of the murders of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and also kind of with, you know, the movement of Black Lives Matter has been around for some time now, but really and truly, we as a community, and I think it's great that a lot of people are being involved in trying to push this matter forward and really kind of having these discussions. I saw that something amazing was announced here that you have been assigned to a project to kind of talk a little bit or in regards into implicit bias. Can you kind of give us a little bit of information about that project and really and truly kind of like what is the mission that you want to gain out of that?
Sure, absolutely. So Dean Chang and I have talked about implicit bias in hiring previously, before this movement really started taking off. It's something that I'm familiar with just because my expertise is in organizational behavior, and a subset of organizational behavior includes diversity and inclusion. The main goal that we were trying to accomplish is, let me start over. So if we look at our industry, we see so many people of color working in our industry. If we look at our student body, we see so many people of color in our student body. Mm-hmm. What we do not see is very many people of color among our faculty. Okay. Mm-hmm. So unless something has changed, to my knowledge, we have one Black faculty member at the Chaplain School. Well, why? That doesn't make sense. That's not representative of our student body or our industry. So Dean Chang and I were saying, well, we've got so many smart people who probably want the same goal to increase representation among our faculty list. Let's get together and let's have a conversation and kind of brainstorm ideas on ways to increase that representation. And implicit bias comes up. Just the goal is not to teach people about implicit bias per se. The big goal is to increase Black representation among our faculty. And organically, implicit bias would come up in that discussion because that is certainly one of the barriers that we see.
And thank you so much. You know, I'm glad that this topic is being really touched on. I think that, you know, for a lot of us that are in the industry, we agree with you. You know, Lourdes and I came, our backgrounds from the industry just like yourself. And it's true what you said. It's funny how you see so many of diverse ethnicities, especially African-Americans, Blacks in the industry working their butt offs, right? So they have this experience, even up to managers and directors. So it's interesting to kind of find out, all right, so why are they not, you know, in front of our student who is of a diverse population, you know, itself. So I think it's really great and kudos to you definitely for really kind of taking the lead on this and starting this amazing and so important conversation. Cause, you know, I don't think that it's too late. I think it's about time. So thank you again. And I'm wishing you the best on this project.
Thank you. I'm excited about it. And I know that it's going to be a conversation that some people are going to be afraid to participate in, because I know I've had many discussions about this with colleagues, not just at FIU, but with professors at other universities. And people are saying to me, well, I don't know what to say. It's not my place to say anything. What if I say the wrong thing? And I think that one of the important things we're going to have to acknowledge at the beginning of all this is that, yeah, we're probably going to say the wrong thing at times, but we're all here to learn and listen as well as move the needle forward, right?
Yeah, of course. You talked about how important diversity was to you and how open you are to tackle implicit bias within the Chaplain School. My question is, why do you think you were chosen to lead the conversation?
That's a great question, because I think the knee-jerk reaction was, wait, why are you talking about this? Because you're a heterosexual white female, right? Mm-hmm. And I totally get that. That was one of my questions when I was speaking to Dean Chang originally, right? I believe the reason that he came to me with this is because of my background in organizational behavior. Well, actually twofold. I think because he knows that this is my expertise, he wanted to tap into the existing resources we have at the Chaplain School versus trying to find someone outside of the school. And also he knows my personal beliefs with regards to this and how passionate I feel about it. So I think it was just kind of a winning combination in his mind.
Thank you for sharing that. I definitely see why you were chosen. Do you think training can decrease implicit bias in the workplace?
I do think so. And I think that studies would show this. I think that it's not just, I think that it has to be the appropriate training. I don't think you can just shove, you know, a video in somebody's face and expect that to solve the problem. I think it has to be effective training. And I think all of that begins with simple awareness that this is a thing that happens and everyone is susceptible to it. And that doesn't make you a bad person, but what makes you a better person is recognizing it and taking action to keep that from you making the wrong choices. If that makes sense.
Yes. Absolutely. And how do you think leaders can invoke implicit bias in the workplace?
So I don't think we want to evoke it. I think we want to recognize it and set it aside when making decisions. And I think, like I said, that begins with awareness and eventual training. And I think that's one of the things that we're trying to do with these conversations that we're going to start having with our faculty is say, you know, this is a thing. And if you can recognize it, then you can avoid letting it sway your judgment.
Yeah, I think that I don't want to say the problems, but I wonder is, I mean, this has been around forever. You know, I worked in training and development and human resources, and I agree with you, Dr. K. You know, we talk about diversity. I remember I've done trainings on it, and, you know, but implicit bias is kind of one of those hard things that you can't just say, here's a definition and make sure that we don't do this. Because I wonder if it's something that is just natural. And sometimes people say, no, of course not. I'm always looking for fair and making sure that I'm providing equal opportunities and looking at overall everyone. But I'm wondering if sometimes, like you said, sometimes having these difficult and like great conversation really leads to making sure that the workplace is not kind of falling into that, which sometimes it could happen, you know? Now, I'm glad that we are now, and I think it's great. I'm looking at how companies are changing just their logos and even like really kind of looking into deep of, like, I saw something on like the brand Band-Aid was now offering a variety of colors, you know, for Band-Aids. So I find that so interesting. And we talked a little bit about this on our last podcast, but do you think that we are making progress right now and change towards, you know, really improving this implicit bias? Or do you feel like we got some more, obviously more work to do? Or do you think that we kind of like now took a step back, especially with a lot of the, you know, injustice and things that we're seeing across the nation?
That's a good question. When you say we, do you mean at the chaplain school or do you mean society or?
I would say, if you don't mind, because you know it's me, could we do twofold and say, I would think at the chaplain school and then also I feel like in society overall.
Okay. So within the chaplain school, I won't say that the problem is implicit bias. So I want to be clear on that. Right. I don't necessarily think that we don't have enough Black representation among faculty because of implicit bias.
Of course.
What I do think is that that could be a factor that is occurring, mm-hmm. right?
Okay.
And with regards to progress, I think in the chaplain school, absolutely, because we are going to take that first step of having the conversations, right? Every journey starts with one step, right? So we have started our journey. In society, I think as well, because we've got so much awareness and so mm-hmm. many people are speaking out and so many people are taking actions. Companies are literally saying, I am going to dedicate one spot on my board or whatever their choice is to ensure that I have representation at the top level.
I agree. Taking that one step. So previously you mentioned that you had a lot of experience within the industry. And I wanted to know which job position you learned from the most. And what did you learn from that job position, if you can share with us?
Yeah. You know, my husband is also in the industry. He's a restaurant general manager. And he and I often joke and say that we want our children to absolutely be a server at some point in their life so that they can see.
Amen.
I feel like if you've never had that experience, then you're very likely to become a Karen, right?
I love it, I love it, Dr. K. That's why she's one.
So, well, at the same time, I also don't want them in the industry at all because, you know, we see the dark side as well. So I think that it really is being a teenager as a server and learning at an early age, you know, tolerance, patience, putting on a smile even when someone is making you not want to smile, right? There's just so many things that you learn from something as simple as that entry-level position. And I think that it's really powerful and it can make you a better person in society.
Absolutely. And I'm glad that you touched on that because, you know, we really, especially in our career development office, we push that. And I know some students think, you know, when I graduate and I get my undergraduate, but my master's, I'm going to jump in to be a director of like food and beverage. And we're like, pause. Did you have like, you know, basic entry level experience? Have you been a hostess? Have you been a server? Like, do you know really and truly how like the operation of a restaurant goes, you know, in order to be able to successfully lead a team, you know? But I do also kind of wanted to dive a little bit now that we're talking about the workforce. And I know that you're really supportive, not just about diversity, but also about really supporting women in the workforce. Do you feel that there is a well balance of women representation in the workforce? And we can talk overall and maybe in the same hospitality.
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. I've just finished a study with some of my colleagues at FIU on women in leadership positions in our industry. I think that it is getting better. I do believe that historically we have been underrepresented at the top levels, and this could be for a variety of reasons. I know that self-selection is certainly one. I believe that many women in our industry will select out of a GM position, for example, because they want more traditional hours when they start a family, right? And that's fine. So I guess the short answer is, I think we are underrepresented at some levels and in some positions, but I do believe that it's getting better.
I agree with you, Dr. K, because I think, you know, looking back when I first started at FIU when I did my undergraduate like 100 years ago, I remember not seeing that many women who were GMs walking into, let's say, a classroom setting as a speaker. And I kept saying, okay, is it that they're not there? Are they only in like, not saying like just entry-level managerial roles, but I was seeing human resources manager. I would see a front office manager, but I kept saying, where is this GM? Where is this VP? You know? And I think that that kind of pushed me and inspired me to say, you know what? I want to be that person, you know? And even with just seeing women of diversity, but it's funny because now moving forward 10, 15 years later, it's almost the same thing if you look at the numbers of you see of women in these high roles versus men. And sometimes I wonder the same thing, which I think comes up in a lot of conversation is, you know, I think I'm not sure if there's a fear, which I understood that fear too, of thinking like this balance of life, you know, can we do it all and still be able to be mothers and, you know, wives or have our own personal lives? Because it's a big step. It's a big role to be in these big CEO or like GM positions. So I'm glad that, you know, you kind of answer that because I have seen personally some more women in that role, but I feel like we can definitely be increasing those numbers, you know, in the workforce, I feel like in society, and also definitely in our industry too.
I agree completely. And there's actually this great initiative going on. I don't know if you're familiar with the Castell Project or the Castell College Project. What they're doing is they are performing these guest speaking panels throughout the United States, or they were before we went on quarantine. And they are bringing successful women from our industry to the classroom to say to hospitality students, you can do it. And this is how I did it. This is how I made it to the top. So it is possible for you. And I think that our female students, when they see that not only is this possible, but they see other people who have done it, then they're going to feel less intimidated. Because I know there's been plenty of times when I've been the only woman at the table, right? Mm-hmm. And I can see where someone could look around and say, wait, I'm the only one. Am I supposed to be here? So that imposter syndrome, I think, also is a factor as to why we see a bit of underrepresentation.
Dr. K, have you ever experienced any prejudice or discrimination? And that can be either in the workplace or on your own personal time?
I think that I think it would be impossible not to have. I honestly don't have something that comes straight to mind, and I mm-hmm. that's probably part of my white privilege, which, you know, I think it's I don't even know what to say about that. But whenever you ask that question, the fact that I don't have something that immediately pops up in my head, that's a little alarming, right?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, Kathy, if I asked you, have you ever been discriminated against? Do you have an example that pops up immediately?
How many you want me to list? You want me to start off at the age of 6?
Exactly.
Right.
So, while I think it would be naive to think that I haven't been, nothing really jumps out to me. I do know that I have been a token female hire more than once. So in organizations where they say all of our faculty are men, we need more women, I do believe that I probably got the job, not solely because I'm a female, but I think that that worked in my favor.
But I think it's good to Dr. K, and this is why, like, I, you know, for my listeners out there, she may say this because I say she's one of my top favorites, professors. And she'll say, Kathy, it's okay for you to say your favorite. But one thing that I love about Dr. K is that she's just authentic and genuine about it. And I feel like, you know, I think that that's great that that goes along with also you having these conversations that and leading this conversation of title of implicit bias. Sorry, guys, because I feel like sometimes it's okay to be honest and say, hey, I can't come to mind and think about that, but I'm sure it may be opposite for my friend or for my colleague who I'm talking about. You know, I feel like it's great that you say that because I know that sometimes that's an uncomfortable topic or for people even to realize like, you know what, I've never really been in that role before. So I'm glad that you share that with us. And I, again, I'm super excited to kind of hear how these conversations are going to go. Now, moving on to some fun questions. Nat, what question do you have for Dr. K?
Yes. So we learned a little bit about you professionally. Now we want to learn a little bit about you personally, not too personal. So I wanted to ask, who is an artist that most people would be surprised that you love to listen to?
Great question. I don't know if it would be a surprise because he's obviously one of the greatest artists of all times, but I'm a big Tupac fan. Both of my children know all the words to California Love. It's one of their favorite songs, the edited version, the clean version. Yeah. If you ask my children at the age of 2 and 4 currently who mommy's favorite music person is, they would say Tupac.
I love it.
I thought you were going to say Michael Jackson for some reason. I don't know why he came to mind when you said the greatest artist of all time.
I do like Michael Jackson. But nobody outshines Tupac.
Oh.
All right. I have one for you. So aside from your necessities and including just your babies as well and your family and your husband, what is one thing that you cannot go a day without? And I feel like I may know the answer to this. I'm going to see if I'm right.
Okay. Originally, my answer would probably be coffee and vodka together. But I feel that quarantine has made the line between what is a necessity and what is not kind of blurred. So I'm going to put vodka and coffee over on the necessities side.
Okay.
So one thing that I couldn't live without, honestly, would be my dishwasher because I've never cooked at home so much in my life. These kids need 100 snacks, all the meals. I swear, I run it twice a day.
Okay, so I was wrong, okay, because I know that Dr. K loves iced tea, okay, especially Dunkin' Donuts iced tea with lemon, okay? Like, I don't care what month, season, every time I see it, first thing in the morning, she got her large iced tea with ice and lemon. And I was just like, I think she put me onto it. I was like, wait, have I been, like, missing on Dunkin'? I like McDonald's iced tea. Nothing against Dunkin' and McDonald's. I support all.
Oh, my God.
No, I'm serious. You could catch her at 9, 10. She has the large. I've been on the calls and she'd be like, wait, I got to get my iced tea fixed. And I'm like, I told my husband, I'm like, we need to try Dunkin' iced tea. Which happens to be delicious.
I ordered my uniform.
Yeah. I love it. Thanks.
At first, when you said iced tea, I thought you were talking about the wrapper iced tea, not the actual iced tea.
That would have been good to go with West Coast and Tupac.
That's what I'm saying. I'm like, oh, she okay. All right. So to end our Q&A with Dr. K, who would you say Dr. K is your inspiration and what motivates you through the toughest days, especially now during, you know, COVID and quarantine? Like, what has been your motivator?
That's a great question. This is going to sound cheesy, but I actually love pretty much every aspect of my job. I absolutely love that I'm able to be around students. Their energy is just super inspiring, especially how resilient all my students have been during this time. I love doing research. There's honestly never a day that I wake up and I'm not excited about this job that I get to do. It's such an honor.
Oh, well, it's an honor to have you as part of our team, Dr. K. We appreciate your knowledge and all the information that you're able to share, not only with the students, but with the rest of the staff, just because you're such a great person to just go and talk to about anything and everything. So,
thank you.
Absolutely. So this concludes our Q&A with Dr. K. So thank you so much for being a guest on our podcast. And we actually have time for our Real World Talks hospitality tea. So Kathy, I know she has a current event and she wants to go ahead and share with us so we can share our insight. So go ahead, Kat, let us know what your topic is.
All right. So I know that many of us, including myself, have been yearning for some source of normality, whatever that may be nowadays. And especially when you're kind of thinking of things that we just naturally enjoy doing. So, you know, some of us are thinking, okay, like what's going to happen in the fall semester for like, you know, beer fest or like, let's say the Art Basel. Now, I love sports. I don't share that with many of y'all, but I was excited to hear, which has been in talks about how is sports going to be coming back in lieu of COVID-19. And I saw that the NBA, which, you know, has kind of been back and forth, but they announced that they will be up and going and lifting off actually to our local city, Orlando. Actually, they're going to be arriving in July. And it's going to be about 22 participating teams. The actual starting of the season is going to be on July 30th, which is one of my favorite dates in the whole wide world. Won't discuss why. But funny story about it is that, you know, there has been some mix-up about the players feeling, okay, I don't know if I feel safe, you know, coming back, you know, as there have been, you know, players that have tested positive. As of right now, it's actually been 25 NBA team members that have come back tested positive. But you know, the NBA definitely wants to kind of continue to bring this home, even though the fans may not be able to be amongst the games. And they're actually going to be have this kind of cool idea. I call it cool and kind of crazy at the same time, where they're going to be three hosting hotels, the Grand Floridian, the Yacht Club, and the Grand Destinino. And they're basically kind of going to be using these hotels as bubbles where the players will stay when they're not actually practicing and actually as in a game. And in these bubbles, they're going to be providing all exclusive VIP service. So they'll have their own personal culinary chefs. They're going to be designing their menus to their liking, massages, pedicure, manicure, state-of-the-art game stations, everything there that they can ask for. Now, the other part to this is that, you know, in Florida, we've been on the news with a couple of other states with the rises of our COVID cases. So what do you think, ladies? You think this is a good move for, I would say of America and forget America. I would say of just the world who wants to kind of get a feel of like, we're back into seeing our sports that we love to see. Or do you feel like this may not be the best move right away in lieu of the COVID-19? And we'll start with you first, Dr. K. What are your thoughts?
You know, it's such a mix. I genuinely understand that mental health is important. Sports are a very big part of many people's lives. My husband is dying for sports to come back. I think that this could be, depending on how it's done, it could be a ray of hope for people in giving them that normalcy and giving them back something that's such an important aspect of their lives. I do worry, because experts are telling us that it's not safe to commingle and that we do need the distance. So I don't know. I don't have any wisdom to drop on you.
I mean, my husband and I, we love to watch, believe it or not, pro wrestling. So I know that that is actually still going on air. They are airing wrestling. They are doing it in a performance center located in Orlando with no audience. So it's just pretty much the wrestlers wrestling amongst themselves with some side commentators. However, recently there have been at least 30 people who have tested positive for the virus over the past 3 weeks within the wrestling business. So this includes behind the scenes workers, in-ring talent. And, you know, although my husband and I are entertained while watching this, I feel that I think it was too soon for this to all occur because within the matter of 3 weeks, 30 people tested positive. So, I agree with you, Dr. K. I'm kind of torn too. I appreciate the fact that I'm being entertained, but at the same time, it's sad to see so many people who are testing positive and risking their health and safety solely for the entertainment purposes. So I'm torn as well.
What about you, Nat?
Honestly, I think we could wait a little bit longer. Yeah. For the entertainment, I think we should continue social distancing, honestly. Mm-hmm. So, what I can say right now is I think they just should shut down the production or proceeding with entertaining us and just keep social distancing. That's it. That's what I think should happen.
So I always feel like I'm the oddball of the group, and I don't, you know, I hope my listeners don't hate me for this. I agree with all of you guys, and I feel like I'm always in this middle part of, like, I guess I want to bounce back some normality, and I also think of the industry that we are in and we support, which is, you know, the tourism. So just thinking about, like, I was excited when Orlando kind of bounced back with fear, right? Because I was like, yes, yeah. Disney's reopening. Universal, our hotels are bouncing back, which means that there's opportunity, especially for our students, you know, who are in that area or who are also willing to relocate. So when I heard about the NBA, there was a little selfish part of me that was like, all right, you know, my family, we like to get together. You know, we're kind of big LeBron, you know, we hate him, we love him. You know, right now we're ready for him. And, but at the same time, I, you know, say at what cost, right? So I feel like it's a necessity for our industry to bounce back, to kind of have these events. Look at these hotels, like they are fully providing staff to be able to provide this much support to this many team members, which that means that there's jobs, you know, which is kind of a little bit opposite challenge that other major cities like Miami's having, you know, and all across the United States in the hospitality business. So I always feel like I'm in this middle part where I'm excited and I'm happy to see these things for various reasons, you know, for our alum and student opportunities, for our industry, and also for being a little bit selfish, having a little bit of normality, being able to watch a game that, you know, we miss seeing and we can't be part of the stands. But then, yeah, you guys are right. It's kind of like I don't even know we've reached the peak yet in Florida. You know, it's kind of scary. And what does this now cost with all of these players coming in from all various, because, you know, they were stating in the news that they haven't even said how many of these players are coming from various cities. And then they're going to have to be tested. And there's this odd waiting period of time too, you know? So it's a tricky kind of topic. But, you know, I guess we kind of literally have to wait and see, because as we see, definitely there's some aspects of our country that definitely wants to move forward and provide back some normality and joy, I guess, to our everyday lives. So let's kind of watch and see, ladies. And that's it on my end.
Well, that concludes our Real World Talks Tea and our podcast. Thank you so much again, Dr. Kitterlin Lynch, for joining us. And we appreciate it.
Yes, it was fun.
And so, listeners, tune in next week. And we will talk about some more Real World Talks tea and some trivia next week. Have an amazing day and an amazing week.
Bye.
Bye.
Stay safe.